Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. If anyone drives by the encampment in the east end of Coburg, it appears to be getting larger. Since the winter, the number of people in tents has increased. On today's show, Coburg Police Chief Paul Vandegraaff discusses the increased focus on the dynamic patrol and the Downtown Community Action Plan. He will look at the impact of these initiatives, what they mean to public safety and law enforcement, and the cost to taxpayers. He will address the concerns related to the increasing size of the homeless encampment and the recent spike in drug-related arrests and weapons charges. Lastly, the chief will speak to the potential risks and strategies, along with the future of the encampment site. I am absolutely pleased to have with me today Coburg Police Chief Paul Vandegraaff. Welcome back to Consider This Northumberland.
Thanks for having me once again, Robert.
There doesn't seem to be a press release in the last month that doesn't refer to the Dynamic Patrol or the Downtown Community Action Plan. Now, neither of these initiatives are new, so why are we seeing more mentions of these programs?
Listen, this is a direct result of what I've heard loud and clear from the community in relation to the impact of how they're feeling in that downtown and the area surrounding the encampment. So, yeah, although it's definitely front and center, and we do have a heightened profile in relation to our efforts in this particular event, there have been other press releases about other conduct, but right now a lot of our attention is spent in that particular patrol zone.
What percentage now are team's efforts are you devoting to these programs?
Well, it's really interesting, Robert, because of some other changes with our other partners and different things, we've actually had to increase the amount of time as we go to the encampment, as EMS will attend only with police presence, fire will only attend with police presence, and county social services will only attend with police presence. So if I had 100%, I'm going to say probably right now 60 to 65% of our organizational efforts are spent in this particular event.
Now, everybody might not remember what is a dynamic patrol or what is the Downtown Community Action Plan. Could you explain what those two things are, please?
Yeah, very, very, very quickly. We have dynamic patrols, and it's designed to move wherever the community needs us. So last summer, we'll recall there was a large community outcry around one particular residence up in Battelle Crescent. So we had a dynamic patrol around that. And as the encampment moved and found its locations to different places. So dynamic patrol is just an initiative where we realign our available resources to attend to a growing problem. The downtown initiative is always something that we do around the summer months anyways, because our downtown comes alive and is beautiful and its visitors come out and the restaurants open and everything happens. So we always have a more increased presence anyways. It just so happens there is a convergence of both of these events this year.
Is there an additional cost to doing these things?
No. So what we have is we obviously have budgeted dollars for uniform presence and CIB or criminal investigations. And what we're doing is we're actually moving our attention. We're moving those officers' budgeted time into these events. But there's also an additional expense. There is an overtime element to this. This costs money. This obviously isn't something I can do. I don't have a pile of constables waiting on the deck to get assigned to something. So there's some reassignment, and my credit goes to the police association. They've been very forgiving around some of the collective agreement language about allowing me to move people a bit more quickly than we can. So it's a bit of a shared event for sure. But as I've said in other presentations, our attention with our regular duty hours to this means something else is not being done. So maybe we're not as present in the schools as we get ready for schools to wrap up, or maybe we're not as present in a road safety campaign that we may like to be.
You mentioned a couple of community-based policing initiatives. Are there more serious things that are being missed because we're having to devote so much energy and time to these two initiatives?
Yeah, so very clearly, no resident in the town of Coburg is ever at risk of when they pick up 911 and they have an emergency anywhere in the town, our people are going to come in, in an amazing response time, and they're going to provide what I hope to be amazing police service. But there are those non-priority events, like I would say, maybe a radar initiative, maybe, for instance, I might say maybe being an ex-traffic guy, I guarantee you over the last 2 weeks, we would have had a heightened campaign around speed enforcement in the school zones. Why? Because as the kids are getting really excited about school ending, they're paying less attention to the safety rules of the road, and they're going to be running all over the place. So we would have liked to have had the old Terry Stanley of days gone by in the schools presenting to all the elementary schools about summer safety. We'd have liked Cindy Reeves to be in the community making sure the kids are doing everything they need to be safe. And we just don't have that. We just do not have the capacity to do that kind of work right now because of the other issues.
We've already talked a little bit about this, but I want to explore it a little bit further. And that is the idea that the dynamic patrol actually was taking place in the fall, and especially in the East End. You mentioned the Battelle Crescent dynamic patrol. Is there a difference between that and the current effort? In other words, does this get modified because of the type of thing that you're patrolling?
Yeah, that's the I word. That's the why we called it dynamic, because it is never two of the same. The dynamic patrol in one particular area could be very specific to a drug house, say. So once we rectify that problem, then we don't have it. This is very large. I would disagree with the warden of the county and his comments that the county is doing everything it can to address the homelessness issue in his most recent statement. I concur with him that we need not to have the violent kind of language on social media, but you need to drive by that encampment today and ask yourself, what should we be doing? Because it's not getting any smaller. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I can tell you, I was in the Cottesmore Street door, going door to door last week and meeting with people, and they're afraid. They're apathetic again. They're not calling us when a barbecue is stolen. Yeah, we are definitely all hands. That's why we had a bail compliance, because I also recognize our job is law enforcement. So in this big scope and this intersection of poverty and homelessness and addiction and mental health, there is something that we can't lose sight of, which is law enforcement. That's what my folks are trained and are excellent at doing. So the bail compliance project was specific to addressing the issues in this particular area around bail compliance. In other words, if we encounter somebody on the street who was not obeying the conditions they agreed to in court, they were arrested, charged, and held accountable. If that person was from another community, we didn't wait for that police service to come and get them. We drove them to another community. And we drove members of wanted people as far as Kingston, I understand, and as far as Waterloo. So that was kind of our bail compliance. We had a very scary yet fruitful drug arrest last week, known drug house in the downtown dynamic patrol area, which began at an arrest of a person by our plainclothes team, which led to the search warrant at the house, which led to a loaded handgun, not an airsoft pistol, not a pellet gun, a loaded handgun was retrieved, and as well as all sorts of contraband. So I'm very proud of the team from walking in these hot days. Like I'm looking at May, we did over 102 foot patrols. In the first 2 weeks of June, we've already done 188. We've made 43 arrests in that particular area. They're doing a great job. And I'm hearing from the community. And when I was wandering up Cottesmore last week, I heard frustration and gratitude. So it was a mixed bag for sure.
This combination of things that you're finding, let's just dig a little bit deeper into this, because when you talk about this enforcement activity, there's a lot of drug-related charges. You've just mentioned a weapons charge. What is this telling you on a deeper level about what's going on within the encampment?
Well, we took a bit of a different stand coming into this dynamic patrol. I'm not interested in holding an addicted person who's managing an addiction accountable for simple possession. But if you're doing anything else untoward in our community and you have drugs on them, contrary to what the Public Sector Alliance asked us to do, we are putting those simple possession charges before the courts. What it's telling me is that we have a drug problem. It's not uncommon. It's going across North America. The opioid epidemic cannot fall under the realm of excusing everything under an opioid epidemic. And we have to start ensuring that we are holding people accountable at all levels, including the drug efforts. So we are routinely in and out of the encampment. We are working with community partners. Obviously, every time any other agency wants to go into the encampment, we have to provide police presence so that they can attend. That's an added cost. I'm drafting a report for our July board meeting. That's your teaser, which will outline the total cost in hours spent on these kinds of encampment related events. I get it, the encampment, and to my empathetic side, is I understand that these are people who are without a home. They do not have a 911 address, and that is sad, and it is a bigger problem. But I have the greater community as chief of police looking to me to hold a community standard, regardless of neighborhood, regardless of the encampment neighborhood or the neighborhood of Cottesmore or the neighborhood of Battelle. Every neighborhood is looking to me to have a community standard, and that's part of this approach.
Just to go back for a second, the bail enforcement, will we see more of this type of activity? Because this is not something that you normally do. Am I correct in that?
Yeah. No, it's definitely a part of the initiative. So this was an all hands on deck requirement. Everybody in the police service, from our auxiliaries who are our volunteers in a very high public relations, our special constables, our crime analysts, our data entry people, our criminal vest, everyone owned a piece of this puzzle. And we will be doing more bail compliance. I just was briefed by my team, and we'll roll out the next phase of bail compliance. We're going to do a stolen property sweep. We have a few more. Like, this initiative is not going away. This isn't a flash in the pan. This is where we are driving our resources for the foreseeable future.
What does the bail enforcement element particularly affect? What are you trying to achieve by doing this?
Accountability. What we are doing is there are people within our community who clearly are agreeing to a variety of conditions, be it probation or bail. We need those people to obey. If they say they're going to live at 123 Any Street, you need to live at 123 Any Street and not be in the encampment. If you're saying you are going to not be outside of your home at night, then you need to be in your home at night. If you're wanted for a failing to attend court, you're going to go to court. So for us, this is our way to address this intersecting problem in our lane. And you'll note the frustration in my voice in that we as a police service do a tremendous amount of work with our MHART team, our HARP team, and all of those kind of areas. And they do fantastic work. And that's important as from our collaborative space. But our job is police enforcement. Our job is law enforcement. And I'm using this as an opportunity to remind both my people and the community that everybody has a role to play, and we are playing our principal role.
In the first 2 weeks of May, 24 arrests and 9 responses to drug poisonings took place. How is this different than any other two-week period?
The arrests were specific to that area, so I'm not sure whether it would have been any different. And as far as the drug poisonings, it's really difficult to track 1 week to the next. Other than because you never know when a really bad dose of or dangerous drugs come into the community. So we're reporting it because we are committed from our accountability and transparency piece to report every 2 week period. So it'd be hard for me unless I go back to every other 2 week period to try to make a comparison. But listen, if you have 9 drug poisoning events in 2 weeks, that's 9 too many.
Around the same time as we're talking about, the police force went out and collected 83 shopping carts. You estimated that they had a value of $50,000. What made you decide that this was a priority?
I drive by the encampment every night on the way home, and it's a simple sign to me. And I'm not definitely a subscriber to the broken windows theory, the old theory from New York, Commander Bratton. But it tells me that if I don't care enough to return the bright yellow shopping cart to No Frills, then what do I care about? So it was a singular, it was my idea. So if there's bad news, you can blame the chief. If it's good news, you can thank the chief. Regardless, I'll find it somewhere in the middle. And I understand I'll land 50-50 and I don't really care. At the end of the day, we are so blessed to be in Coburg. We spoke with the grocery store owners, and they were actually very empathetic. And they're like, oh, you know what? We do a pretty good job. We have teams that go around and pick them up regularly. We don't necessarily want to get in the middle of this. But at the end of the day, we worked with our partners. We worked with Parn, and we were able to replace the shopping cart with other means to transport their personal belongings around with. But for me, it was a visible sign that someone doesn't care if we're not moving the 13 yellow, bright yellow, No Frills shopping carts back to No Frills. And when I got the results after that kind of few days and that Saturday, over 83 were returned. That tells me we have a very, very large problem. And it's a blight. The site, it's a blight. So we had an amnesty period. We followed that up with a compliance period where people were arrested and charged. And we have corrected the behavior. I'm not saying 100%, but we've definitely improved the visual of that.
There are a host of other incidents where the dynamic patrol has yielded results that are not as high profile. Some assaults, mischief, theft, and so on. Are these incidents directly as a result of the patrols, or would you have responded to calls otherwise?
A bit of both. I would suggest that we would have responded to these calls regardless if we had a patrol or not. Obviously, when we go out publicly and say we're going to be doing this kind of work, you have a duty to report that to the public. And that's what we do. But I also would say that there's an increase in reporting because we're present. But I did say in my conversations with some good people along Cosmer on last week, they're telling me about incidents they haven't reported, but I honestly believe by being present, by being available, being responsive, and again, as I said, I can't say it enough, but as we are now called to these incidents to support paramedics when they go in, and we're supporting fire if they have to go in, and we're supporting social services if they have to go in, the only people who can't say they're not going to go in without police are the police. So I'm going to suggest that the reporting and the increased kind of work that we're being done is directly a result of this initiative.
Many of the press releases you send out do not name names. Yet, in the past month, especially with the Dynamic Patrol and the Downtown Community Action Plan, names are being used. Why the difference?
I was wondering if we were going to get through this interview without that question, Robert, so I appreciate that. This is this falls right in line with our policy in relation to issues of community events. So if I'm going to publicize and I'm going to go out and create an initiative and create a protocol and redeploy resources, that to me fits within our policy where we'll name. And I have consistently named people that have been involved and been arrested in relation to this. There have been other incidents that are not in relation to the Dynamic Patrol where our current policy stands. So I'm very comfortable that we remain consistent. We remain responsive. I know there are people in the community who want me to release everybody at all times, and that's an acceptable belief. There are others who don't believe I should have done this. And again, like everything else, I've had probably as much response about people saying stop doing this as I've had way to go, chief, for doing this. So at the end of the day, we're going to stay true to our policy, stay true to our commitment to this. And as long as we're addressing this as a dynamic patrol, we will continue the naming process.
You have said many times in our conversations and in public that you cannot arrest our way out of this problem. For some, they may say this appears to be what you're trying to do. Is that your goal?
I'm 100%. It's not working. If that's my goal, I failed day one. So if this initiative started May 15th, then the initiative was a failure May 16th. We are not arresting ourselves out of homelessness. We are not arresting ourselves out of addictions. We are not arresting ourselves out of that triangle intersect. Full stop. But we have our lane, and our lane is law enforcement, and we will hold people accountable. I meet with grassroots agencies about once every 2 weeks who serve this homeless, this vulnerable community. And at my most recent meeting, which was going back prior to the Dynamic Patrol, when I announced in advance this was coming, So those people who are serving these vulnerable people, they said to me, thank you, Chief. There are those particular percentage of people that need to be arrested so the good work of that agency can actually be felt by the others. Because we all agree, not everybody who is in that world or in that space is a criminal or is committing crime or is breaching parole or probation or anything else. So when I heard them, that group of people who advocate for these people, tell me, thank you, I knew I was on the right spot.
What is different now than before? Because before, these people have been in our town. They have existed. The encampment's been around for almost a year. We've talked before about collective approaches, all this. What happened now that was the tipping point that you decided we've got to get all hands on deck, to use your phrase?
So it's very simple. It's community feedback. Feedback comes in a variety of ways. It comes in personal calls to my cell phone. It comes in emails to myself. It comes in public forums. It comes from the Police Services Board. It comes from council. But I said it earlier, and at the risk of making more enemies, doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different result is insanity. We know Einstein said it. At the end of the day, I continue to be innovative and collaborative, and I'll work with anybody to move solution. But contrary to the warden's comments, again, you drive by the encampment, it is not changing for the better, it's changing for the worst. We have a lane. Our lane is law enforcement. The community told me loud and clear, Chief, we need and expect more. And we are doing what we can with our empathetic mind up front, but we're holding people accountable for their actions. We are increasing our visibility to ensure people feel safe. We continue to remind people they are safe, and we're going to hold people accountable for their misbehavior. Full stop. It is a change. I'm not arresting myself. This is not going to necessarily change it. If I had the silver bullet, I'd be selling it across the world, because this is a problem that's happening everywhere. But at the same time, I can't have rampant crime where people are having stuff, petty theft, petty nuisance, petty, all the things you can name, without addressing it. So this is our response. We anticipated it. We were aware from our analytic review of this that we knew this would ramp up when the weather got warmer. We were right in that we expected the growth of the encampment to look what it is. We saw nobody was making a move to move the encampment, to create another space, to create another alternative, other than to keep adding it. And everyone's seen the growth of the encampment. So this really was a proactive, forward-looking, strategic response. And I can't go through an interview I couldn't do this without the men and women of the service from all ranks and styles who do this work, and the board, who, when I presented this to the board, gave their full endorsement of it.
You've already mentioned the importance of the institutional support you've gotten from agencies. You've mentioned how important the public input has been. One group you haven't talked about are the politicians. Has there been any pressure at all from politicians for you to take this action?
No. Actually, what I get from the politicians is like I get from everybody else. You get a mix. I'm very fortunate that I've been in Coburg for 10 years now. And I've had the great pleasure of working with a variety of community councils. And I can tell you right now that I take my direction strategically from the board, not operationally. I'm paid to make these operational decisions based on what we as a team see. Council obviously wants there to be a sense of safety, because if I'm getting 10 calls, they're getting 100. Individually, councils have spoken to me, but it would actually be comical that any counselor were to direct me as a chief of police, because they know fundamentally it's not allowed. So if I was ever given a direction from a counselor, once we were done laughing about it, I would remind them that they could reach out to the board. But the council, I believe, is very supportive of our initiatives. They've always been very supportive of what we do. We work consistently with bylaw. We work consistently with fire. We work consistently with our community partners. So the mayor hasn't called me and said, Chief, you better do this or else, because that would actually be, I would probably opt for or else, because you know how stubborn I am.
True enough, but if they're bending your ear as much as everybody else, surely that must have an impact.
They actually don't bend my ear as much as some. Not everybody is the same. And in fact, more times than not, my counsel has asked me questions versus infused an opinion. So, and even that's few and far between. I see the deputy mayor and Councilor Ribeiro more regular, as they sit on the police services board. I have occasions to encounter the mayor and various committees and different things that we work with the town. But collectively, I have a job to do. I speak with our MPP regularly, as it's a provincial piece of land, as we know, and all of the issues around that. Our MPP does not say, hey, chief, you better get this done. And at the end of the day, I'm an integrous individual who leads an organization of integrous people, and I wouldn't tolerate that.
Is it a coincidence that the increase in security around the encampment began in the last few months, and then you've started your initiatives? Is there anything deeper to this? I know there's been a lot of speculation about the future of the encampment. Are these efforts a signal that there's going to be a change at the site?
Yeah, so the Infrastructure Ontario manages the site. They make all of the decisions in relation to security. I've not been consulted. Their security are provided by them, paid for by them. The staffing levels are decided by them. Obviously, we appreciate that. Our team connect with them every day to ensure that they feel supported and safe. The fencing was a decision made by Infrastructure Ontario. There is no, ideally, you would want to create a fence where it actually kind of controlled access, but it's not really doing that in the sense that we're just, it's more of a psychological barrier, I think. But like, if somebody wants to walk into the encampment, they can walk into the encampment. It's not like you're going to get turned away at the gate for not having a ticket or like a concert or something. But at the end of the day, Infrastructure Ontario works with us as best we can. Whenever they're doing work at the site, our officers go there to make sure that they get their work done. Their decisions around the amount of security is up to them. As far as what's happening with the future of the site, I don't know. I know as much as you report. And I can tell you right now that the Waterloo decision is still the decision that's ruling the land in Ontario. My recommendation has been and continues to be that there needs to be some form of appeal process on what that decision looks like and the outcomes of that decision. But that's well above my pay grade. At the end of the day, if somebody brings forth a plan to move that encampment, we will meet with all involved parties, apply all legal aspects of the decision to the decision like we did when they started their encampment on the beach. And we worked with the city on that, or the town on that circumstance. And when they moved the encampment to the court property or the county property up at the EMS site, we'll work with the county and helping them move that along. So at this particular juncture, we're not positioning, we're not ready to position, and no one's tipped their hands to say, hey, chief, you better get ready on July 3rd. We're kicking everybody out. I've got no information on that.
Chief Paul Vandegraaff, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thanks, Robert.
That was Cobourg Police Chief Paul Vandegraaff. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.